Here's a question. Is it fair to grow up and have to deal with this financial crisis as an adult?
What happens now could change our life in 20 years. Like, when we're older and adults and stuff, this could still be going, because maybe someone makes a bad move and all this other bad stuff happens, and then all this, it causes all this money to be made, and then we're not to be paying really high taxes whenever we grow up and all that stuff.
That's Max Leo thinking about the future in Mrs. Janet Kunkel's fifth grade class at Iron Forge Educational Center in Boiling Springs, Pennsylvania. Yesterday we visited that classroom and asked them about the fairness of all kinds of things going on in the world, but particularly the financial bailout that's been passed in Washington and is trying to reassure markets. Here's what Matthew Pennybaker had to say about it.
It's not fair. Like, that's like giving someone a dollar and giving someone a dime. So, like, it just doesn't add up. It's not equal.
Well, how many times have you heard the phrase, life's not fair? I have two sets of twins, and believe me, fairness between the two sets of twins is a big issue in our house. We think intuitively about fairness, but on the big questions, are we actually good at determining what is fair, and do we have to decide between fairness and our need to revenge or find blame in all kinds of issues? That's certainly something Congress has been dealing with. Joining us now is Benedict Carey, who's a New York Times science reporter. He joins us from Portland, Oregon. Benedict, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You know, it's a challenge to sort out fairness from all the other emotional impulses that we might have in a situation like a financial bailout where we didn't cause the problem, but yet we're called upon to help fix it. How challenging is it?
Well, very much so in this case, because this is extremely complicated. No one's sure exactly who's to blame. But I think you can see that, certainly constituents and members of Congress were extremely sensitive to this issue of fairness, which held up the passage of this bailout. And I think, you know, they were criticized for being childish or stupid, but the delay really comes out of what are very strong instincts to want to sort of police the society, the world that you're living in, and make sure people, you know, follow the rules.
And I think if the situation is abstract, it's harder to decide what's fair and what isn't. Whereas if people are close to you, if your emotional connection to what's going on is actually very close, sometimes it's easier. Here's what Molly Good, one of the fifth graders in Pennsylvania, had to say about how she deals with fairness in her own life.
Do you get angry when you see people that are being treated unfairly?
Like, if it's my friends and people I care about, like, I'll get really mad and nasty at the person who's being unfair.
So is anger and feeling nasty constructive in an evolutionary biological perspective?
Well, yes. I mean, it's very much so. It's a self-protective thing, of course. You want to essentially let people know that you won't be taken advantage of, or your friends or your family members won't be, to have extract some cost for being exploited. The question is a little different when you're talking about, you know, someone who's not in your family, who's not in Molly's family. Maybe if she saw another kid being picked on the playground, she'd feel that that's unfair, that's wrong. The question is, would she then act and intervene or say something? And that's a different kind of sense of fairness related to the first one. But it's what scientists call third-party punishment or third-party fairness. You know, you're acting in effect, or you're deciding to act as a good Samaritan or as a citizen enforcer to try to put things right. And that's a little bit more analogous to the bailout situation.
Well, it was amazing in talking to the fifth graders yesterday how much they are able and are interested in talking about money. Listen to Laurel Gramsley.
I think, like, if he doesn't give you the money, I think the parents should, like, take away that person's, like, most prized possession, and they have to work for the money until they can give it back to the money back to the parents. I think they should keep that item, and then when he finally pays it back, they can give it.
I mean, you can almost hear Congressman Waxman at the congressional hearings yesterday with Richard Fuld in the Laurel sentiments there. There's an intuitive quality to precisely what she's saying, right, Benedict?
There is. It shows itself very early in kids, and it translates also quickly to money. Things that are valuable, and that's the way that this stuff is studied. They run all sorts of investment games to see how long it takes for people to get angry at each other or to punish each other or to burn each other, how often they cooperate, and so on. But you can see from Laurel's comments there that she understands viscerally exactly that, if someone takes something from you unfairly, that you should make them feel that loss themselves in a way that's precisely or very much matched to the initial infraction. It's called what psychologists call just desserts punishment, which is just a phrase meaning we sort of calculate the punishments we would inflict very carefully depending on what the infraction was.
Well, Hammurabi called it eye for an eye, I think. Where do we learn fairness? Here's a theory from Madison Hemler, who's a fifth grader in Pennsylvania.
I kind of learned it from my parents because my dad would always buy my mom a candy bar and then she'd always split it with me.
It sounds innocent, but there's something very profound about that example.
Yeah, I think there's no question that parents, by their example, maybe most of all, are transmitting, communicating these ideas of fairness. Evolutionary scientists have reasons to believe that those same properties are stabilizing things in communities, especially small groups. But seeing this play out, among the adults that are closest to you is a strong message.
Benedict, how does that work in bigger groups? How does our notion of wanting to hold somebody accountable, does that make us better off as a group? Does it beg the question of meting out that just dessert? And is that process, does that make us a better community?
Well, that's an open question. Punishment is costly for the person doing the punishing, and for $700 billion this is a bailout, I guess. But it's costly for the person doing the punishing and the person on the other end, and it can get retributive. It can get carried away. It's not clear that the same sense of fairness is equally applicable to large sort of diverse things like complicated things like the U.S. economy as it is on the playground or in a family or in a small village or town.
But Benedict, on some level, as we take our medicine here in the financial crisis, evolutionary trends are at work somewhere inside all of us. Benedict Carey, science writer for the New York Times and author of today's Science Times article, Wired for Justice. Thanks, Benedict.
You're welcome. Thanks.